Hi, thanks for coming this afternoon. It's kind of nice. You're the stalwart of the crowd, I'm sure. My topic area is a little bit different than the instrumentation stuff because I'm going to be speaking in somewhat broader terms, but I think it's still reaches into some core ideas that are worth thinking about. Our premise is that big data and global models are large area models that deal with soils information commonly suffer from weak soil landscape models and can be improved, and we can inform that from the soil science community. So that's the basic idea. So in general, to kind of give you some context of what I'm working with here, let's talk about big data. Big data sets are so large and complex that traditional processing softwares are inadequate to deal with them. And that certainly seems to be true in the grand scale of things. And the challenges that go with that include, in particular, relevant to today, our analysis and visualization of that. And if Wikipedia tells you this is so, it must be so. So this gives us a couple or three different points to talk about the challenges that represents to soil science and for soil science. The first is that pedology is at a critical point in that there are ever more sophisticated users demanding high-resolution information with explicit spatial and temporal soil data that goes with it. The quantification of that information and data, including uncertainty estimates and expressions. The second item that poses a challenge is, along with this, is data mining and machine learning techniques, because they've become popular and among soil scientists as well as this broader scientific community. So it's the reality of today, right? And pedology's got to be part of that conversation or we'll be left behind. And lastly, and I think this is worth thinking about in some level, new soil scientists and soils and scientists from other disciplines often rely very heavily on these new approaches, which is fine. And they're looking to predict soil distribution, soil properties, soil processes, but they tend to be largely unaware or only marginally aware of the soil data and the knowledge that is available that we already know about landscape and soil relationships. So what? What about some big data and soil landscape models? If we take an example, and I'll pick on Polaris. Polaris is a 30-meter grid probabilistic model that's used to generate, or was used to generate, a soil series map for the continental U.S. Why choose that? Well, because it brought the machine learning approach home to soil survey in a profound way, because it was a continental one-shot product. And it was the first time that really took a look at that and tried to say, okay, how does this compare with what we think we know from existing information? And in that process, it fundamentally challenged the paradigm for soil survey, which is the soil landscape model underpinning. So here's an example of, just to wet your whistle, on the left you've got the Polaris product, and on the right you've got the corresponding Surgo product. And these are both for the same areas in the San Joaquin Valley and the western portion of the Sierra Nevadas in California. And the red boxes that you see correspond to the overall box over here, so there's a little bit of size distortion. But I want to call your attention to this second pair. And if you look at them carefully, you can see that there seems to be a fair degree of commonality in terms of what the model is expressing. You're looking at a couple of big alluvial fan portions coming down out of the Sierra Nevadas on the upper right, and they're spilling out into the valley, and you're seeing different clusters of soil groups, soil systems out here, one different from another. You have inset streams cutting through it, and you can see that in both products. And so from 6 miles up, it appears that there are quite a fair bit of similarity between these patterns, and that's good. But unfortunately, when you look at this in closer detail or finer scale, the apparent similarities don't hold. And that leads us to the part of, well, okay, two questions. Why? And what, if anything, can we do to marry those two? How can we relate those two approaches so that they inform each other to generate more robust products? Okay, so let's look at it at a finer scale. And this is at a different location altogether. This is out of Benton County, Iowa. And it's a much finer resolution, of course, much closer in. And we're looking at a Sergo product over here versus the Polaris product here with a Sergo line overlay so that you can compare the two. And in this traditional model, you're seeing a couple of things that stand out in terms of soil landscape models. One of them that jumps out is these linear and split-tailed features, and they occur across this landscape. And those are what you would have reasonably assume are drainage ways. And in fact, the Kolo-Ely complex that's mapped in them corresponds to the drainage soils. And they're separating upland areas up here, which is mapped as a Dinsdale soil, and then there's a foot slope soil unit over here, Tama. Well, that's the traditional product and the traditional expression of soil landscape model set. If you compare that to what the Polaris generated over here, you see the same lines. If you look at the drainage ways, and these colors correspond to the same soil types, there's no apparent pattern there to my eyes. Similarly, if you look at the upland area, right, where the Dinsdale was observed, transect, verified, whatnot, and you go over here, it's largely missing in action. In fact, most of the Dinsdale appears to occur in a foot slope position, which makes no sense because the foot slope position there is our silt transported soils, they're deep silt soils, whereas the Dinsdale is defined as a relatively thin silt cap over till. So the point is, not a very good product, not a very good success in terms of generating a model that you can wrap your brain around at the human operative scale. Because that's the scale where most of our decision making occurs. Okay? So what about it? What about why these dissimilarities? Well, it's not unique to DSmart products, and Polaris is a DSmart product. It's a probabilistic model based on random forest algorithms. And that approach randomly assigns points within a soil map unit that's proportional to their percent component composition. So they're randomly assigned points based on the percent of the composition, and it treats it randomly. But we know that soil distributions aren't random, at least not totally. And it goes on like this. The algorithm, it keys off of specified terrain features, and it uses those relationships between point data and terrain features to develop a set of terrain feature covariates and then extrapolates across the landscape. It's a probabilistic model that treats soil distribution information, the series and components within the map unit, as randomly distributed. Okay. So what? So let's look at another location for comparison. This is out in Ohio, in Coshocton County, Ohio, and it's looking at a Coshocton silt loam 6 to 15% slope eroded map unit. And Sergo, what was done there was that 52 polygons were selected and used by Polaris to come up with its prediction of composition and distribution, and that was compared to the Sergo product. And the main point I want to make here is that the Sergo information, and this is based again on transects and site observations, came up with 85% of the unit map of the polygons are Coshocton as named. If you look at, and it's got five other subcomponents of which are minor composition or never mines. Polaris, by comparison, came up with 54 different soil types for those predicted for those 52 polygons. And the Coshocton, which was the named one here, came out at 7.6%. Well, that's a hell of a contrast in terms of prediction. Furthermore, four of these top 10 predicted in terms of acreage members for those polygons occur in materials that don't even exist in that area. They don't. They're drawn in, they're pulled in by the predictions from other areas, adjoining areas, but they're quite 25 miles away, that sort of thing. So not a very good match. And the last example is a different site, five different polygons of Coshocton and analysis done. And the light blue cells here, well, they should be light blue, teal, I guess, are the only portions of that were predicted by Polaris to actually be Coshocton. And the summary conclusion was there was field and affirmation by the people who actually did the work and said, no, it really is Coshocton out there. And they had the data to back it up. So how do you move forward with this? What do we do? What does it mean? We have a disconnect, and that's just one example. There are other model comparisons that can be done where there are disconnects. The main idea here is we need to understand the physical processes that exist on the landscape and incorporate those to pull in more robust soil landscape models to inform that kind of machine learning product and the big data set analysis approach. And here's a case. This is a site in West Texas, and you've never been there, and that's fine. What are you looking at? You're looking at a scarp face of a landform of a hill. It's a cuesta, and you're looking at in the foreground a floodplain area. And you can see that there are recurring patterns of surface morphometry here that correspond to something. And if we can figure out what that is, we can predict the soil distribution and type that you're going to occur. But it starts with being able to identify the dominant geomorphic processes, and you can do that at this scale. These are areas of hill slope erosion. You've got hill slope and slope sediment deposition down at the foot slope, and out here you've got some kind of alluvial process. That can be delineated, that can be identified, and can be quantified. At a different scale, you could go even finer, and you could, if you so chose, you could inform a soil landscape model of dealing with the hill slope positions, and you could segregate out differences between shoulder and back slope and foot slope and so slope. These are obviously the traditional segregated subcomponents of hills. And in fact, it turns out that, yeah, there are soil differences here. There are flagstone-dominated fragmental soils up in the shoulder. There are Channer-dominated gravelly soils down the back slopes, and there's no big cookies down here. It's just fine gravels. And that's a recurring pattern across that landscape. So what? So there's two things coming together here. The first thing is to understand the physical processes that are occurring and give rise to the soil material that's there to work with, and that has to be accommodated by or coordinated with the scales at which these things occur, at which they are expressed, because not all features and parameters are equally expressed at the same scale. And the big data sets are tending to not capture that. Here's an example of scale effect. You've got 60 by 60 meter grid, and you can see the pixel result here for the digital product versus over here with a 10 by 10 meter grid, which is a much finer and appropriate scale for segregating those different relevant pieces of the landscape. So there's power and there's value in doing that. So in moving forward, we're seeing it's particularly true with new soil scientists, but it's also true with outside non-soil science specialists that they face some common challenges, and there's something we can do about it. I'll start with by saying that neither the traditional nor the big data model approach are perfect. Both have strengths, both have limitations, and they can be used to beneficially inform each other, and I think that's where we need to go. Secondly, there is a fundamental lesson worth learning here, and that is it's critical to understand the scale and the extent of the dominant physical processes. Put it simply, we need good, reliable soil landscape models that hold true to our experience and observations in the field, and that is instrumental in successfully stratifying the soil landscape universe to accurately capture the relationships that are sought after by these predictive models and the differences between deterministic models versus stochastic models. And that incorporates and involves being able to accurately model and integrate these key elements of soil landscape models, which is the geomorphology, stratigraphy, hydrology, pedology, and if you really want to dial it in, add in climate and vegetation. Thank you.